pocket to the shores of Orange Beach and all points in between. An insider's perspective on Alabama politics. It's the Jeff Poor Show.
I don't think Hank done it this way.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106 is the text line. Hour number two is now underway. A few things to get out of the way here in the news. We're talking about the Iran deal. Mike Pence out on a book tour right now criticizing the deal. A lot of Republicans very sour on it. And I just, I don't think they're going to prevail. I don't think the critics are going to make much headway here. They just don't have the numbers. They may be right that this memorandum of understanding forced a U.S. hand on a lot of things pertaining to Iran. But the other side is kind of doing this thing where they say, it's comical that this is some kind of significant loss, but I mean, the U.S. had a military success that they have, and the Iranians are in a much different place than they were before this conflict started. Their military is a fraction of what it was. Their leadership was wiped out. They're weakened. There's no question. Now, did it end any kind of threat? Does giving the Iranians the ability to sell their oil, are they just going to take that money, turn around, and give it to their proxies to wage terrorism? I'm not convinced of that. I mean, there's no question they have in the past, but they're weakened right now. And they have real needs domestically. So that's sort of the top of the list, but the most important thing I think for our domestic politics here is the markets like it, and the price of oil is falling, which is I think the linchpin here to get gas prices down and try to put this episode in the past. Open the Strait of Hormuz. Sure, they war gamed it, and they knew that that was going to be a problem. And they probably figured there was going to be some issues with the economy. It's going to cause some hardships, but I don't think they took it that next step. What's the politics going to be like to come out of that? And you're going to have some real losses in Congress in the midterms if you keep at it. That's just the reality. We may not like it. You may think, well, if paying more for gasoline means a safer situation, then so be it. But I don't think that that's going to be have widespread support. I just don't believe that. 251-343-0106. So that's kind of at the top of the list. As I say, British politics. Starmer resigns. That's a real hit to the globalist left, the pro-mass migration crowd. To me, I don't see how you ignore that aspect of it, that you're having this clash of cultures, clash of civilizations. Something that continues to be brought up, and I don't think it's going anywhere. Guys, the Tommy Tuberville ballot challenge stuff, or residency challenge, whatever the situation is, it's not going to be resolved in court. The court's not going to have jurisdiction. It's probably not the best look, but Tommy Tuberville is the party nominee right now. And there's a lawsuit out there that a lot of the handful of left-wingers in Alabama are excited about. the publisher of our local alt weeklies, I guess, excited about. But there's no prohibition in the Alabama Constitution against running for governor. If you haven't lived here for 7 years, you can get on the ballot. That's up to the party. The Republican Party has greenlit Tommy Tuberville. Whatever his residency situation is, and they heard all of the discussions, and they think that he meets the standard. So the next phase is a court challenge. Well, we're going to fight. Lower court could do whatever. I mean, it's in a friendly jurisdiction in Montgomery County. But the Alabama Supreme Court is not going to intervene here. Their legal argument is the Constitution says you can't be governor if you haven't lived here for 7 years, but it doesn't say you can't run for governor. Okay, so Tommy Tuberville's going to probably beat Doug Jones. Then what happens? Let's say that he wins the election and you have Governor-elect Tuberville. Did you take it to court? Well, the court doesn't. It's not resolved in court. It's resolved by the Alabama legislature, a Republican supermajority. Now, I want you to think about this. Let's say something happens to Tommy Tuberville, governor-elect, and he can't serve, like he's sick or gets hurt or something, and dies, I don't know, between the election and when he's sworn in, the legislature still picks the governor. It becomes a legislative matter at that point, not something the courts decide. And the Supreme Court, the elected Republican Supreme Court, I'm just going to tell you this, is going to rule on their side. And whatever, I think he's been here 7 years. I've been on the air since 2019, and I know seeing him out and around Alabama, I think he's a resident, but that's not really up to me. What's the legal definition? Well, let's say this is adjudicated, litigated, whatever. Is there anybody listening to this show right now that thinks the Republican supermajority Alabama legislature is going to stand in the way of the will of the voters and rule Tommy Tuberville ineligible to be governor? Now, what they're probably trying to do is try to pave a way for Doug Jones, but there's just no path there. This is not December 2017, a special election with one thing on the ballot. With a voter suppression thing against Republicans with Roy Moore, this is totally different. This is a Hail Mary. I'm sorry. Tommy Tuberville's probably going to be governor. Spend all the time you want to evaluating it, doing deep dives, looking at tax returns. So Arthur Orr, he's the chairman of the education trust fund budgets, and he doesn't think that there's anything there. We've seen a number of lawmakers, and I think Orr's a reasonable guy. But he said on Dale Jackson's show, he doesn't think that this is going to stick. And he's in the legislature. I believe he's on the Judiciary Committee. This doesn't look like this is going anywhere to me. Happy to talk about that. Katie Britt, our junior, soon-to-be senior United States Senator, is backing Jerry Carl. Remember, she was against him when the districts were drawn together with Rhett Marcus. I think she's financially backing him. So there appears to be a peace breakthrough there. And there's some other things going on we could get to here over the course of the program. 251-343-0106. Mike writes, well, for some good news, Michigan's basketball coach Dusty May is leaving to become the Mavericks coach. Hopefully Michigan decides to hire another Juwan Howard. Man, Michigan was tough this year. Let's see. When Representative Stringer said his 10th, absolutely, I stopped counting. That's just the way people talk. Let's see. Mike writes, 45 is turning into a tunnel with overhead trees. I mean, 45 is a treacherous strip of road. It doesn't get enough attention. It's, you remember Brett Easterbrook, but certainly Shane Stringer talking about that. And they even did like an appearance of Capital Journal. I remember a joint appearance. And this was before Todd Stacey took it over. It was Don Daly. I mean, this has been that long that they've been talking about this. But tell y'all a secret here. Don't tell anybody. The Alabama Department of Transportation hates it when these lawmakers start talking about road projects. They don't like it. They think that these pesky lawmakers are politicizing their master plan, their community planning, their state planning, whatever it is. They're not the ones learned in transportation policy. Highway design, and they don't know traffic counts. They just need to stay in their lane. John Cooper, he has he's not in greatest of health these days, but he used to just, his face would just turn like as red as a tomato when he'd talk about these lawmakers. Andy Witt was another one. These lawmakers, all they do is they're advocating for their district, talking about the highway projects and what the state is doing. And a lot of times these guys, the director will entertain them and just tell them no. But when they go public with it, they don't want these lawmakers criticizing them publicly on radio shows like this, on TV shows. You just take what we give you and you be thankful for it. And that's just bad government, I think. So we'll continue to talk about it, you know. Those right-wing extremists on the airwaves. And Jack Cooper's welcome anytime on this show. Or anybody from the Alabama Department of Transportation. So I got maybe like a half hour's worth of questions, probably more than that. They texted, the only thing Stringer is actually going to do is, all right, I'm not reading that. Be nice. Keith, the Fauci thing is once again one of those things that Trump was right about. The media crucified him for calling at the China virus. I don't understand how someone can be pardoned for something they weren't convicted of yet. Well, no one's defined the terms of the pardon, the constitutional pardon. And there's sort of this rule of thumb that it's absolute. Now, you can be pardoned for, this has happened in the past, and the courts have allowed it, when there are cases being adjudicated. George W. Bush used it. The J-6ers were convicted. They didn't have their day in court. They got pardoned. Some of them did. Who didn't plea? We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. You work a 40-hour week for a living, just to send it on down the line. This is for the one who drives the big rig.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and a youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound. And no one.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poore Show on FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Monday morning. 251-343-0106. Billy writes, tell me more about the Memorandum of Understanding. Is that the kind of, when the clown talked about his health care plan, he had a concept of a plan. I imagine his memorandum of understanding will turn out to be just like his COP. I think the MOU is way more serious than that. I think there are some like terms, some things that have been written down. It's not campaign rhetoric. Like, you have a real easing of hostilities, Billy. You just do right now. Something's actually happened. Something's actually moving. Now, you know, look, how many times will we play this rope-a-dope game? Hey, we got a peace deal coming, and then, like, something happens to where things escalate, right? And that's perfectly fair, perfectly reasonable. But I think it's different than the concepts of a plan with healthcare. David Fauci is not free of legal peril. He could still be subpoenaed by Congress, and he may have lied to Congress past the date of his pardon. There's also state civil and criminal risk. I asked Gemini about this yesterday. You can't go wrong with Gemini. I think he could be tried in state court. Boy, that'd be a good one for Steve Marshall to go after right now, wouldn't it? See here, man, we got a lot of texts. Tim writes, Jeff, I think these people trying to get Big Creek Lake back open again, just go ahead and contact Trump and let Trump send Maz a letter, and that'll be the end of it. It'll open back up again. It won't take him 5 minutes to do it. Yeah, I wouldn't hold my breath on that. Troy fan, hey, did Barry Moore win the runoff? I was out of state last week. Fire Dog writes, yeah, we guess you got to go to Omaha. Congratulations. Fire Dog, Trump cures cancer, millions out of work, global recession, imminent poorest, hard to hit. Yeah. Well, he gets no credit for anything, and it's politics. There is no incentive for Democrats to praise Trump about anything. No incentive publicly. Now, don't let that fool you. I think there's stuff behind the scenes going on. Democrats are probably working more at the Trump administration than they let on. Did the courts lack jurisdiction when David Cole lied about his residency? No, he was charged with a crime. He was charged with voter fraud. That's an actual crime. Running for governor, if you're not eligible, is not a crime. Now, was Tommy Tuberville registered to vote in a place he didn't live? Because that's one of the things that they're going after him on, that he was registered to vote in Florida. But then that wouldn't be a question for Alabama authorities to prosecute. It'd be up to the state of Florida, I would assume. But they didn't get David Cole on residency. They got him on voter fraud. So it's like a totally different scenario there. Now, my understanding, the guy who did the David Cole lawsuit is involved here in this. This just sounds like something like that crowd, Joyce Vance, et cetera, over drinks one night on the back of a napkin, came up with a lawsuit to go after Tommy Tuberville. And I believe that there's some media outlets here that are getting kind of led around here. Sure, it's a story worth discussing, but I don't think they think it is what it is at all. Unnamed texter, old guy, John Cooper equals John Bolton, completely unhinged. He is very unhinged. But the guy, think about this. John Cooper was Robert Bentley's very first appointment when he won the gubernatorial election in 2010, before he even took office. He's been at Aldott that long. It is 2026. He should have been gone a long time ago. He should have retired a long time ago. One of the universe's great mysteries is how he lasts as long as he did. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.
say can't be done. We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound, just what no bandit runs.
Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us. On this Monday morning, 251-343-0106. That's the text line. You want to be in touch with the program. All you got to do is text me. Still to come, Jerry Carl will be with us. He's a candidate for the 1st Congressional District. Right now, kind of the leading candidate, but it is still going to be a race regardless of what happens. We'll do it. We'll do the blocking and tackling there, and we'll make sure we talk more about that. First and second congressional districts, and I know there's some candidates who have qualified in that contest as well. But I'll give you the full rundown. I'll tell you something, though. The smart people at Cook Political Report, way smarter than you and I, guys. They have taken the Shamari Figures race. So he's the incumbent at AL2. And I think maybe they're onto something here. And it went from solid R to likely R. But there's this, being an incumbent and you have an inherent ability to raise money. And that's very difficult to overcome. But like I said, they redrew the congressional line. So Shamari Figures is qualified to run in the 2nd congressional district. He is the incumbent Democrat, and it looks like potentially right now, if the election were held today, and this were August the 11th, we'd be having a Shamari Figures, Rep. Marcus, Republican versus Democrat general election on November 3rd. And you think about that. Well, yeah, it seems like a no-brainer. The Republicans are going to win. The lines are different now. The Supreme Court has ruled. It is established. But there's certain things that Shamari Figures will have as a Democrat that other Democratic challengers wouldn't have. And I think that just the name ID and the incumbency. But he's going to have a situation where he can raise a lot of campaign cash. And the other reason you got to think about it like this is if you're running a race that is, I guess, where you have an enterprise candidate from Coffee County versus a Montgomery candidate. In Shamari Figures, and yeah, we know him from Mobile, but he is now a Montgomery guy where the population is in that congressional district. Do Democrats come out to vote, especially if they come out to vote in numbers that they showed in the primaries? So what Republicans will have to overcome is that enthusiasm gap. Now, this is probably true. A lot of Republicans don't vote in primaries. I tell you some anecdotal things going on. I heard this all over the state. Democrats showed up to vote last Tuesday thinking that they were going to be able to vote in the Republican primary, not knowing the state's laws. And then they got their ballot. There's like two races on it, and they just walked away. They left their ballot there because they voted in Democratic primary. They weren't eligible to vote in Republican primary runoff. That's just unheard of. I mean, you have Democrats showing up to vote. Does that translate? Does that enthusiasm translate in a general election setting? And we'll have to wait and see. But that's why Shamari Figures, I think is maybe has a little bit of a shot here. He'll raise money. You have very high Democrat enthusiasm, and you have a population base that represents him, whereas Republican candidate will be from the more rural part of the state. However, I guess in the past, I mean, Terry Everett when he was Congressman Nail too. I believe he was from Geneva County. They got Martha Roby, who was from Montgomery, former city councilwoman in Montgomery. And she defeated Bobby Bright. And then you got, we had Bobby Bright, who was the mayor of Montgomery, I forgot, in between as a Democrat. But then you had Barry Moore from Coffee County before they changed the lines. And Barry Moore's just kind of a, he's a far different political phenomenon than anybody I just mentioned. I mean, he's won a statewide election twice now with the Republican primary and the runoff. So he is in a much different place. But if you just kind of look at in the Wiregrass, depends on turnout there, depends on Republican turnout. So the guys at Cook have just, they haven't adjusted it to toss up or anything like that. But they give the Democrat more of a chance than they would in any other of the congressional districts outside of AL7. 251-343-0106. That's the text line. Mike writes, claiming Trump was right or even halfway okay on COVID is revisionist history. He was as bad as Meemaw and everyone else in COVID tyranny. He really threatened anyone who tried to open up. But I guess that's not really Mike is the question here. When we go back to COVID, was he just listening to, was he getting bad? Was he being intentionally misled by a high-ranking government bureaucrat? Was Anthony Fauci telling him something that, you know, wasn't true? And think about the morals and the ethics of this. If there's a nation out there that is manufacturing a virus that can wipe out human civilization, what is the appropriate, I mean, what do we do? Do we just, well, it's China, nothing we can do about it. What should the U.S. have done? There was no repercussions for the Chinese doing gain-of-function research, I mean. I think it has a lot of people, like, kind of irritated. That nothing was ever done about that. No sanctions. I mean, we're more worried about the Iranian regime and what they're doing than the communist Chinese who are manufacturing viruses to shut everything down. And did Anthony Fauci know that? Well, it appears that he did, if you believe what Tulsi Gabbard has put out there. Why? I'm not saying, you know, the buck stops with the president, but it's the top health official in the country who's been through numerous administrations is telling you something else. That this was transmitted from animals to humans, from bats to humans or something, and not manufactured in a lab. What are we supposed to do about that? And then just, I think more importantly, rather than going after Fauci, why aren't we asking these questions about the Chinese? So now I'm looking at MS now. They're doing the smear campaign on Tulsi Gabbard. There's a Washington Post story. Tulsi Gabbard, her guru, and the mysterious messages that helped shape her political career. And there's all this. They're trying to, like, sabotage the messenger here, cast some doubt on Tulsi Gabbard. This is the game here. It's not going to work. And the story just never got traction. I don't, you know, it's one of these situations I would have to imagine, guys, is like, okay, we're handling this behind the scenes. We're going to make sure we take care of this or whatever. You public don't need to, because I think if the public really knew what was going on here and it was treated as a serious story by the news media, then there would be the torches and pitchforks. And that would lead to, I don't know, maybe there's some turmoil unrest. Somebody ought to, nothing will probably come of it. We moved on. It's in the rearview mirror. But people are going to be, this is probably the biggest part of it. If there's ever like a real health emergency, if they ever have another one of these pandemics to where we are told that we have to like rely on the government and just trust them, people are not going to be trusting. They're losing faith in their institutions. And for our social contract to work, you got to have faith in the system, and the system is apparently corrupt, politicized. And there's nothing we can do about it. What do you think is going to happen there? 251-343-0106. And they text her, they can't go after China over COVID because the American institutions are complicit, and that's why Fauci was given a pardon. Maybe there's some truth to that. Also, I was thinking about this at the time. Is it possible? I mean, you just kind of look at the economics of it. We're so reliant upon the communist Chinese. What can we do? I mean, what if Trump had come out and says, okay, we're going to send a few Tomahawk missiles over to the Wuhan lab and just wipe it off the map? We can't ever have this happen again to civilization. Would that be justified? But I'm thinking a lot of circumstances, if it's anybody but the Chinese, that's probably what happens. Do you think if, I don't know, name your random, the Egyptians or the Sherlockans or any other country were doing this in a malicious way, the United States would tolerate it? The world would tolerate it? The entire globe's tolerating it. Look at Australia. Look at some of these countries that were really hit hard by COVID. I also think this, guys, look, and I know this is a text. I'll go ahead and read it from Mike. Whether the meanwhile or Trump types were misled or not, just grossly incompetent, we're still grossly incompetent with COVID. Trump kept the Fauci and Deborah Burke types around and let them take over the country. Well, but you're right. I mean, the buck stops with him. But Mike, what would you have done in that situation? Would you have questioned Anthony Fauci? As for meanwhile, well, and our state health officer was just like Fauci light. There was no accountability there. The governor shut this state down, except for big corporate entities, like big box stores, state liquor stores. But shut down all the small mom and pop shops, ran them out of business. A lot of restaurants out of business. A lot of just small businesses shuttered because of this. And there was no accountability in the election for it. KIV won overwhelmingly. It was kind of more, I was just watching this unfold, that election cycle. No one really ran on that. Lindy Blanchard, Tim James. But that's what I would have made the message there. You have a governor who is wrong here. You give her the benefit of the doubt to a certain point, but then when these other states started opening up, she just doubled down on a mask mandate. Completely doubled down on it. Unnamed texter, Fauci and all the liberal soldiers and the media will never be held accountable. We have known for years the truth about COVID and Big Mike. The Big Mike thing is kind of silly. The COVID thing, I think it's a serious failure in government. I've been saying this since Katrina, and you saw what happened with Hurricane Katrina and the way New Orleans sort of crumbled. But I think there's relying on government for everything as if it's like the highest power in your life, that this is how this is the net result of it. And I'm not saying that you need to work against government, but I do say that you just need to make sure you're taking care of yourself. Because government's going to screw things up. It's meant to be the safety net, the last resort. And it doesn't get things right a lot of times. 251-343-0106. Stick around. This is the Jeff Poor Show on FM Talk 106.5. Welcome back to the Jeff Poor Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for being with us on this Monday morning. Silicon Dell Jackson in the next segment. So make sure you stay tuned for Dell Jackson. He will be here in the next segment. Also, Jerry Carl at the bottom of the hour as well. So please stay tuned for that. Mike, when it was suggested that people could go safely to the ABC store but couldn't attend Sunday Mass, I would have fired them on the spot. I agree. I know some churches in some parts of the state just ignored the order because, like, you know, that they put their faith as their higher power. But you would think that's what Kay Ivey would do here, right? But nope. That's just that Jesus voodoo. But the power of prayer and things of that thing, of that sort, are more relevant than your COVID protocol. Now, you can leave it up to individual churches to do the right thing. Hey, we need let's lock down. Let's do it over, you know, Zoom or whatever, YouTube. And the state never really cracked down on these. Because like I said, some churches just went ahead and were like, to hell with you. Well, that's probably not what they said. But, The Attorney General, Steve Marshall, to his credit at the time, was like, you better warning the governor, like, y'all better be real careful here, violating the First Amendment. So I think they backed off, but they gave these, and I know this from hearing it firsthand, that these sheriffs and these counties were threatened by the governor. And the governor knew that, there's nothing that they could do. They're not going to send the Alabama State Troopers into a church and shut it down. They're not that ridiculous. But when the locals needed help from the state, say it was like for hurricane protocol or some kind of, they scoffed at it. Oh, now you want our help. That's just too bad because you didn't do what we told you during COVID. So that was their way of the petty politics of COVID in this state. Old guy, a lot of people who had nothing to offer made tons of money. Meanwhile, people who could do things were marginalized. I need a texture where they get a long text. We'll see how far we could get here. It's called the Iron Cage of Rationality. People fail to realize people in government are not there to serve the public. They're there for a career. Yes. It is rare for someone to stick their neck out and do the right thing and take leadership because prestige, retirement, lucrative contracts, and everything that these professionals have done to proffer, they are necessitates them not doing the right thing, called banality of evil, and what was discussed at length during the Nuremberg trials. Most of the people that ran the Nazi state were not what we could consider, quote unquote, evil. They were careerists trying to preserve their position in a system that incentivized not rocking the boat. We all work in places like that. Anyone that has a job knows somebody or maybe even they themselves will look at the other way and not rock the boat. You want your vacations, you want your retirement, you want to keep your wife happy, you want to send your kids to college. People will do evil things to keep going that, and that's the rationale. Well, Bobby, say this about that real quick, because the elected officials are the ones who could have been the bulwark there and stood in between the gap here, filled the gap where these public servants were unable to. Let's get a break here. We'll be right back. This is FM Talk 106.5.